Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Welcome back to See Also. Hi, Jinxie.
Hey, BL. How are you doing?
I'm good, but the big question is, how are you?
I'm okay. I sound a little husky. I could be your AI, Scarlett Johansson, a la her. I was just about to get back into my first proper work week of the year. A day and a half beforehand, I was like, yeah, I'm ready. And then like a day before, I was like, something feels off. I thought it was like classic Monday-itis. No, it was tonsillitis. And I have been not the best this week, shall we say.
Weirdly, you weren't diagnosed with the Sunday scaries. Instead, tonsillitis.
Tonsillitis.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's fine. I'm here, aren't I?
You're here. We're recording in the morning. We're recording a little later in the week, which also gives us the benefit of being like really up to date on a few things that have happened.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we'll get to that. We will be talking about Salt Lake City this episode. Mm-hmm. Very glad to have seen it. Anyway, what else has been going on in your world?
I'm kind of like straight back into my usual. I kind of was in that holiday haze where I was like, I could just go to the pool. I can just read books and like watch a lot of movies. And now I'm like, oh, that's right. This is the reality of my life. Like interviewing a few pop stars, getting my nails done, screen time going through the roof, the usual, you know, going to the movies a lot.
You make it sound so casual though. Like you're not working pretty much 24/7. And I know the reality, VL. It's like you are working so much all the time.
I was sending emails this morning and then I was like, no one's replying. I realized it was 8:30.
Yeah.
And I'd been at my desk for a while already.
Yes.
But it's okay. It's how I like to do it.
How you like to live.
Yeah, it's how I like to live.
Let her live.
What have you been up to?
I guess the highlight of my year so far was seeing Romy play last week. She was so great. I loved her album last year. It was really like the soundtrack to a lovely couple of weeks in London last year for me. And I've just listened to it quite a lot since. And yeah, seeing her play, she played at Max Watts here and friend of the pod and guest star of our upcoming live episode, Stella Mosgawa, supported her. It was really just such a great, fun show.
I was in the club.
Yeah, I felt like I was back at Fabric or something in London. It was such a good time and she's really lovely and, yeah, she was great. Like it was just such a nice performance. She was really generous with the crowd and appeared to be having just a rip snorter of a night.
What did you wear? Did you wear a button up?
I did wear a button up. It was Verna Babe. It's fine. Yes, I wore a button up. That's funny. I mean, what did you think? I was just going in my 1-800 lasagna sports bra.
Well, you texted me beforehand being like, I can't wear a sports bra, just wear a sports bra to the club. And then I was like, I wonder what Jinxie will wear to this club show.
Well, look, I dusted off some like weird platform sandal sneaker situations.
Oh, yeah.
From a few years ago that I had not worn. And so, like, that was my club attire, I suppose. I mean, I wasn't going to an actual club.
No, I know.
But I mean, it did feel like it. The one thing that I was sad that I forgot I owned was, which is funny because it was a gift from Romy that I wish I had worn to Romy, but it's like a L-word Gen Q promotional holographic bum bag.
Oh, Jinx.
That would have been good.
Yeah, it really would have been.
Oh, wow.
I went to the movies on the weekend and saw Dream Scenario.
Oh, yeah. How was? I haven't seen it yet.
I really rate it. What's the guy's name? Christopher Borgli, who made Sick of Myself. His next movie, Dream Scenario, I was very curious about. I'd heard only bad things about it until Francis Ford Coppola's Instagram post like a couple of days ago.
Oh.
Raving about the talents of his nephew, Nicholas.
I believe he said something like, the work he does in Dream Scenario is like beyond any old uncle's praise or something like that.
So cute. But I saw a photo of Nicolas Cage, I think also at that W, or maybe he was on the cover of W, one of those Jürgen Teller photos. And he looks so like plastic and wooden that like, the amount that he emotes and expresses in Dream Scenario, I was like, you know what? He really did turn it out.
Okay.
He got that face moving. It was really good. I mean, it was like, I've seen criticisms of it that are like, oh, we don't need the straight man cancel culture movie. But I also think it's like kind of, it has a really interesting story to tell because it's about this guy who, I didn't realize it was going to go into kind of like a canceled man, which is essentially what happens after he appears in people's dreams and starts hurting them and becomes like a negative viral sensation. And like people around him like lose opportunities and jobs and like safety and whatever, respect as a result of their association with him. And I was like, do you know who this reminds me of? Is that guy Ken Bone? Do you remember him? From like a presidential debate. I forget what era of president it was, but he stood up and they were like, we're going to take questions from real Americans. And he was kind of this like very portly guy in a little red vest and had a little mustache. And he asked a question and his name was Ken Bone. And so everyone was like, this guy rocks. And so he became like kind of an overnight viral sensation. People loved him. And then he did a Reddit Ask Me Anything.
Oh no.
And so people could click onto his Reddit profile and see what he had posted in the past. Oh. And it really stuck out to me that one of the things he posted was like, it was when all these Hollywood actors' nudes got leaked. And he posted something about wanting to see Jennifer Lawrence's butthole.
Yeah, I do remember this.
And so I was like, that's the guy. Like he was milkshake ducked apparently. But like I think Dream Scenario like deals with it in like a really funny, kooky, kind of surreal way.
Cool. Well, yeah. I loved Sick of Myself, as you know, so I got to see it.
Yeah.
I am still catching up on the films. I have not been into the cinemas to protect the other cinema goers. And so I still have not seen Wonka. I have not seen Timmy sing those tunes. But I did catch up on Bottoms and I was really disappointed.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, I saw it at like a packed screening. Still, it's still packed, which is very
That's
cool.
That's great.
And was in Carlton and it was like a cheap night or something. And it was totally full of young people who were like having the time of their lives. Like the person in front of us was just like continuously pointing to the screen the whole film. like as if to be like, can you believe it?
Look at this thing.
Yeah. It was like interesting experience, more interactive than I had imagined.
Sure.
But it was kind of nice to see so many people so into it, like younger than me, maybe not as cynical as me. But I just, it didn't do it for me.
It didn't do it. It wasn't funny enough for me.
It was not funny enough. Yeah. And the, I mean, I'm not going to like go through all of the plot holes or whatever, but it just sort of didn't bring it. Like it wasn't.
It didn't live up to its own conceit, I think.
No, it didn't have, it actually didn't have highs and lows.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, like obviously Io, our girl, we fantastic.
Love. Golden Globe winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the parts were there, but I think that it was like assembled a bit wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Io, Edebiri looked fab in her beautiful red Prada gown at Golden Globes.
So perf.
I didn't have much else to say about the Golden Globes. Like, Natasha Lyonne looked great in Schiaparelli, but what else have we got?
Oh, you don't want to do a tight 10 on Joe Coy. It's been done. I finally watched the monologue yesterday because I was like, I don't need to have an opinion on this, but I will.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn, this guy, like, he couldn't even, like, forgetting the fact that the jokes were bad, which they were, he couldn't even get a sentence out half the time.
Really?
Yeah, like he was like stumbling over words and and so a lot of stuff wasn't landing, I think, because you couldn't track where the punchline was supposed to be.
That's what you love at an award ceremony, isn't it? Yeah,
so like bad on so many levels. I don't know. It just felt really forced and like deeply, deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. There is one movie that I do want to do a tight 10 on, and that's Mean Girls.
Okay.
Okay. I went to the press screening last night and, well, first of all, it was a Wednesday night and they said on the invite they wanted people to wear pink because on Wednesday they wear pink.
Mm.
And I found that deeply cringe. And also coming so soon after Barbie, I was like, you need to have a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell people to cut out their singlets and show their bras through it or something.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But people wore pink, including, I will tell you off mic who it was, but like a former reality show contestant who was like cancelled in recent years. I learned because I pointed her out in front of us at the candy bar and my friend was like, oh yeah, she got cancelled and told me why. And then I was like, damn, it really happens to everyone. And she was like, yeah, everyone in the cinema is probably going to get cancelled eventually. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Kind of comforting in its own way. But I literally went in and a small talk when I ran into people was like, this is going to be bad, right? Which, you know, is not a great attitude to have. So I was shonked to come out and give it 4 stars on Letterboxd.
Okay.
I really liked it.
So it is, let's be clear, it is the movie of the musical based on the film Mean Girls.
See, It's a Hairspray, if you will.
Right. And Tina Fey is still in it.
That's the weird part.
Playing the same character, but isn't the mum like much younger or something?
So Tina Fey and Tim Meadows play the same characters they played in the 2004 original film.
Mm-hmm.
The weird bit is that Tina Fey's wearing the same costumes as she wore in the original. Like it's that when I realized she was wearing the same spotty blouse in the like counseling bit at the end where they all like do trust falls, I was like, this is deeply strange.
Mm.
But besides them, everyone else has been recast.
Who's the mum?
Jenna Fisher from The Office plays Katie's mum. Busy Phillips plays the Amy Poehler
mum. That's who I meant. Yeah.
And she's excellent. You love Girls Five Ever. I don't, but her character.
I sure do love Girls Five Ever and have been revisiting the soundtrack in recent weeks.
Okay. Her performance in Mean Girls is like what I think her Girls Five Ever character could be, has the potential to be. It's really fun. She's wearing juicy sweats and it made me realize that like 20 years is the exact life cycle of a trend.
Mm.
To come back around to have a like hot mum wearing juicy sweatsuits. Renee Rapp, who plays Regina and who is a pop star, she originated she played the Regina George role in the musical on Broadway. Did you watch Sex Lives of College Girls?
No.
okay, it's good. I like it.
Okay.
Timmy's sister Pauline is in it. Renee Rapp is in that, and I really like her in it, but she's like a musical girl. She's released an album and an EP. She's kind of like one of the new like pop girlies. She's also really queer and like lesbians love her.
Okay.
Like young, like the people in the audience at your bottom screening love Renee Rapp.
Okay.
She reads as so deeply queer to me that watching her in Mean Girls, I was like, I don't buy this. I don't buy you as being like the nasty hetero mean girl ruling the school. Mm. But she's good at singing, even if she sings in cursive, which makes it kind of, you know, that like that kind of, yeah. There's a lot of that in Mean Girls, which makes it really hard to like get the jokes in the songs. And there are jokes in the songs. Our Angori Rice, Australia's own Angori Rice.
What's she been in?
Mayor of Easttown.
Oh, yeah.
Siobhan.
Yeah.
Siobhan. What's Boston? Siobhan.
Siobhan.
Yeah, she plays the Lindsay Lohan role, right. The lead, which is very exciting. And they've made some updates to the script to kind of like better fit politically or like, you know, instead of her being like, I'm from Africa, she's like, I'm from Kenya. Mm-hmm. And like the other two plastics, the actors playing Karen, Gretchen, I thought were incredible comedic stars. There's a really exciting cameo. Everyone in my audience gasped. People were clapping and cheering quite a lot, and I didn't like that. But sometimes when you see
Brody on patrol,
sometimes. I guess the thing with Mean Girls that's so weird is that in 2004, it came out in the movies. I was 14. I went and saw it. And then it became like it's still memed currently. Like people still quote it and meme it and put quotes on cards and T-shirts and BuzzFeed quizzes and shit. And so it's very weird to have the memes and the quotes just reappear again in another new movie. And so there was a lot of like, oh, there's that thing again, like recognition and clapping and stuff that I was like, yeah, settle down. We all saw the movie. It's been out for 20 years. But I liked it. I thought it was good. And there is there's one really big cameo in it. I'm not going to spoil it. Just on record, I'm not spoiling it, but the internet, I assume, is going to.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have a C also for original Mean Girls.
Great.
Which is that the actor who played Kevin Napoor, Kevin G, the rapping mathlete,
mm-hmm.
his name's Rajiv Surendra, and he now makes YouTube. He's a content creator. He makes YouTube videos about the creative and domestic arts. And they're these very soothing, I feel like you might be into them, Jinxie, these very soothing videos about like how to wrap gifts, how to plant an orchid, how to like clean your floors, how to make pom-poms, how to make an apron. Like he's really just kind of this Renaissance man. Okay, speaking of burn books, a little lady in Utah came prepared to the Salt Lake City reunion with one this week.
Yeah, I was like thrilled to watch the I have not felt that way about a reunion episode of Housewives in so long.
I put it in my calendar to make sure I wasn't out. the receipts, timeline, screenshots, mm-hmm. proof of Salt Lake City. Like last week's episode, the finale of season 4 of Salt, like I can't believe there are only 4 seasons in, Jinxie.
Yeah. Should we just say, maybe we could put a time code in to this episode of when we stop talking about Salt Lake City, because we are going to talk Poor Things soon. True. So if you are not a fan of this, of the Housewives, but maybe want to hear about Poor Things, you can skip ahead because we will go deep.
But I am just going to say, you know who loves The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City? Emma Stone.
She does.
So get on board or like, get out, but you can also get out and skip ahead. Just look at the show notes. Okay, so reality Von Teese is a phrase I had never heard before until a week ago.
Same.
And now I think I'm going to estimate I've heard it 789 times.
The same amount of times that Lisa said her ring cost $60,000.
It was sentimental. Oh my God, the fake tans on the reunion.
Yeah.
We've just got to say their laundry, they just must burn those couches after the women get up. They would be, I can't even pick a thing in the room that is the shade of brown that those couches would be. Those women are slick with a fresh spray tan top to toe.
Oh, it just brings me back to Real Housewives of New Zealand when they went on holidays to Cairns or something, and I cannot remember her name. She was referred to as the big unit on the show. I can't remember her name. I'm so sorry.
New Zealand's Oprah.
Yeah, that's right. And she was wearing a white swimsuit, and just like the leg holes of that swimsuit were just covered in brown goo, and it looked so disgusting. Yeah. But it was just her fake tan. And she was like, what? It's just my fake. I can't. Can you do a New Zealand accent?
What? It's just my fake tan.
Tan?
Tan?
Anyway.
Her brown leg holes. Yes. Okay, so I think Dita Von Teese, A, should sue.
What?
But there have been a lot of lawsuits floating in and
Why
out.
Why should Dita Von Teese. Yeah. Oh, right. I thought you were saying reality.
It took me so long to realize that it was a play on Dita Von Teese.
Which is so stupid.
Because she had her like rockabilly like baby bangs in the profile photo. It was supposed to be this like smoking a cigar with a long cigarette holder kind of energy.
Americans, apologies to our listeners, they think they are so good at coming up with like punny names for drag queens. Like, fuck, they're like RuPaul's drag queens.
Yeah.
Like, they are just, like, the names are just like really, really stretched. And this is just the worst. Yeah. And like, you know that Monica thinks she's having some big drag queen moment.
Yeah.
She already had one this season. But yeah, it's like, it's not funny and it's not clever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reality not. Von Teese. Like, stop.
And also the tone of the account, by all accounts, is very, it's very like, we're going to bring this fucker down. We're going to bring this show down. We're going to bring these women down. We're going to bring this franchise down. And that's not the kind of, like, I follow a lot of Bravo accounts, but I don't think I follow any that are like deeply hateful of the shows that they're covering or the people on them. Like, I love a little like exposed tax situation as much as anyone. But like, I think for the most part, you're either watching like a fan or you're watching like someone who kind of has critical takes or like meme kind of things. But the idea of following an account that's just trying to like expose and like destroy the cast of a reality show is like, it just shows how much of a small town Salt Lake City is, because this is so Facebook group behavior, like local mummies Facebook group or something.
Yeah, or one of those like community area, you know, and like I do follow it's a
good
karma.
It's the Salt Lake City Good Karma Network.
Yes, totally.
But this is the second Finsta related storyline on Salt Lake City.
Oh, Angie H.
Yeah, remember the reason we have Angie K. The reason Angie K is Angie K is because there used to be Angie H.
And we thought she was going to be good at the beginning. She was a good time.
She kind of slayed. Her husband made a Finsta to like talk shit about the other women.
Which is so stupid.
Which is crazy husband behavior.
It is crazy husband behavior. I also like, I don't follow it. Like I watch, as you know, BL, a lot of housewives. I don't follow a single housewife or a single housewife account except for Jenna Lyons. She's the only one I have continued to follow.
Congratulations on your engagement, Jenna.
Yeah, congratulations. Your New Year's Eve looked lovely. But like I don't follow any of these. I read like recaps and stuff. I don't listen to any other podcast devoted to it. Like I'm pretty much just like in and out with the housewives.
Interesting.
So the idea that there is this account like Reality Von Teese and someone like you who does follow a lot of that haven't even heard of it before is so interesting and funny to me. It's like what damage was actually done by her? Like clearly it was like a lot of personal psychological damage to all the women on the show by the way that they reacted to the news. But yeah, like how big, like it's is it that kind of like
yeah
big fish small frozen over pond. I don't know.
I hope a small pond you go ice fishing in. I hope they get into this on the next installments of the reunion, like just what damage she did to the other women on this account. Because by the looks of it, she was referring to Jen Shah as Jen Blah. And so I'm like, you're not even funny.
No, she's not even funny.
But Andy did some really good lawyering because in the first part of the reunion, he did have a big moment where Monica was talking about how much it hurts when you have people commenting on your life on social media. And like, I went through this and like slept with my brother-in-law and then all these people, the comments are a different thing. And Whitney was like, yeah, it's really different when it's the comments on social media. And I could just see Andy's little like, okay, we got that on the record that she thinks social media comments are really hurtful.
Yeah. And then Heather dropped in too. Like she rounded that up as well.
Yeah. Well, Heather's got her producing hat on.
Oh, I love it. <this season. laughs> But can we go back to the actual finale episode?
Yeah.
It was the best hour of television I have seen in so long.
Yeah.
It's like of a reality show. It was.
No,
just stop. Television.
Yeah. They should have been at the Golden Globes.
It should have been. It should have been one of those like special episodes of a show. You know, like the Emmys, how they have those like special episodes.
Yeah, or get Whitney presenting like best ensemble to Succession.
That would have been
Kendall's
ideal.
Kendall's on his healing journey.
Yeah. it was just so great. Like I loved every second of it, but I haven't told you this, but okay. I know that there's probably too much Top Chef talk on the pod, but
Dog not show.
He truly showed his like empath tendencies. Well, so we know we're watching this because we were gasping so much and like had our hands like over our mouths that he was going crazy. Like he was beside himself. He was so worried that like we were having some kind of breakdown.
He was service dogging you.
Yeah, he totally was. First time in his life. And he was like jumping up and like pouring at us to make sure that we were okay. Like he was genuinely very concerned that we were having some kind of deep emotional shared breakdown.
You were in distress.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. It was so funny. And then we were like soothing the dog to be like, no, it's fine. We're just watching reality TV. Don't you understand what's happening, Top Chef?
Mummies are okay.
Yeah, mummies are okay. Anyway, it was really funny. I've never seen that behavior come out before.
Wow.
It was amazing.
The plotting of that episode really heightened the stakes too. Like the 1 hour later, 8 hours before, oh, 4 hours later, rewind, women on the beach, wind blown, like Whitney in like her bandage dress, Meredith's hair all over her face, like, and also like Heather just like teasing out the information to all of the women who are like hooked, and Lisa Barlow trying to follow and narrate every step of the way, where Heather was like, I knew that something was wrong and we've been through so much together, the four of us. And then Lisa goes, stop, Heather, you're going to cry. Not I'm going to cry, you're going to cry.
Yeah, it's like made me keep thinking of Lisa Rinna going like, oh, you're so angry. You're so angry.
Lisa's just so funny without – Lisa Barlow is just so funny without even trying. Like Heather stands up and says, we were ride or fucking die for Jen. And I was like, speak for yourself.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
And then when she's like, I went on book tour and didn't tell anyone that she gave me a black eye, and everyone's like, and then you just hear Lisa Barlow go, whoa.
I actually think Lisa Barlow is my favorite.
She is mine now. Yeah.
And she's, unfortunately, she's the best. She has the best style.
She's
always the best dressed.
She knows it too.
Yeah, she does.
She doesn't know much else. So the thing about when you said, you know, you're curious what Reality Von Teese did to the other women. There is one Bravo podcast that I listen to here and there. It's called the Bravo Docket, and it's two Housewives fans who are also lawyers, and they go through like Erica Jane, Jen Shah, like all the legality storylines.
All our faves.
It's so good. But they did a special episode about Reality Von Teese because they had interacted with the account when it was like really active, because they had posted, they had released episodes of their podcast about Jen, which Reality Von Teese was like screenshotting and like screen recording and sharing. And they had all this back and forth. And they said once they got on to kind of the same page and had engaged a little bit, their DMs would just blow up with tags. And so Reality Von Teese would just tag a zillion accounts on every story or post that they did. And so maybe it was that kind of like, I'm not going to say harassment, but like pestering. So like you can imagine these Utah housewives, their DMs just blowing up with these Bravo quote unquote fan accounts called Reality Von Teese, or I think there are a couple of them with the same name. And it felt like niggling them or pestering them or like attacking them just because there were like all these mentions. Anyway, that's just something that I'm thinking about as we're going into parts two and three of the reunion.
Yeah, I'll be so, I'm so interested in what she has to say for herself. Mm-hmm. Also in the first part.
She's not serving so far the first part. She's so defensive.
She's so defensive. And it's so funny because it's like we were, I won't speak for you, I was with her for like a large part of the series because it's like, she is really the first person to come in and be like, I cannot afford a bag. I cannot like afford really to raise my kids in the way I want to. And like, she's really struggling financially and emotionally. And she's got like an abusive mom. And then you see kind of, I don't know, like the cycle of abuse there with like how she is becoming her mom. Mm-hmm. And anyway, but like you're kind of with her. And she is pointing out like all the stupidities of the cast, and you're like,
she's
yeah,
the audience proxy.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's like the Greek chorus until she's not. Well, that's Angie K.
She'd be so mad if you said someone else was Greek in that town.
I do wonder what the Greek, if there is a Greek community in Salt Lake City, and what they think of Angie K's like constant, like, I am the only Greek. I'm really
Greek in the village.
Yeah.
I mean, we know her dad, her gorgeous dad. But I remember like episode one of this season, I was like, is Angie being Greek and Meredith loving baths going to be their plotline the entire season? Mm-hmm. Turns out, yes.
Yes, it is. It sure is. Where was I?
You like Monica, Greek chorus.
Yes. But Monica immediately undid all of the good she had set up in the you know, ongoing season when she lied about two stupid things in the reunion episode that are so easily traceable. Yeah. And like, you know, she claimed she'd said one thing and immediately Heather's like, you know, fell into Heather's trap, and Heather's got the voice memo to prove actually what she said, and then she tried to double down, and then that whole thing of like how she came to be on the show, and she was like, I said you don't have like
your
good
ratings suck, your show's shit, your cast sucks,
and I loved Andy's face during all of that,
of course.
But then like her actual email was so benign. It was like, you need a hot Latina chick, basically, an excommunicated Latina.
Did you also see the timestamp was like 11:30 p.m. on that God. Email?
That's like after a couple of White Claws for sure. But yeah, look, I don't know. Like a few weeks ago or months ago, we were talking about, is this show, like I was saying, positing that maybe this show has gone too far in showing like Heather pissing herself, vomiting at the same time in a Sprinter van. Like, do we really need to see this? Like, that was just all, like, I don't know.
Preamble.
Like, it was just, yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is the most important show on television, actually.
We haven't even seen Mary Cosby in weeks.
I don't need
think
to
about
see Mary
that.
Cosby. I do not need to see her.
Yeah, I agree. I think Monica had such potential, and especially after that finale, I didn't even think that that was potentially her last time on the show. I thought that there was a world in which she would come back. A lot of the women would say, we're not going to film with her, but she would find allies, or they would cast new people or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think she's friends with like Dana, that woman from last season, but like the Salt Lake City women.
But you meant, is that the same name as the woman who's like, 25,000.
25,000 from Beverly Hills. Yeah.
I still think about money in those terms.
My sister got a fancy pair of sunglasses recently, and every time she wears them, we go, 25,000. Monica, she's been such a raw nerve this season, and it's been equal parts great and tough to watch because you're right. Like all the stuff with her mom is really tricky. I feel real empathy for her kids.
Mm, yeah, me too.
Her four kids. And even when she went on this trip to Bermuda and she like FaceTimed her eldest daughter who was just like, that's great, mom. I'm really happy for you.
But she's
like,
fully parenting her mom.
Yes. And like your grandma's here, lock the doors, don't go outside. Like there's a real strain on those kids, which I really feel for. But she, her tendency all season, it's almost like she wanted to get caught or suspected in a way because she was like holding information over everyone. Yeah.
I fully think that this was like pretty much the plan of it.
Yeah.
It seems very convenient that Heather's hairstylist is suddenly going to give her the name, like right at the end of the shoot. Like that is not, like that is so set up. I don't think by the producers, but I think that I just think that there is something amiss there. Maybe not, I don't know, but it just seemed like she knew she was like one and done basically with the season. Like I don't think she could hope to shoot a second season, Monica, because I cannot imagine any of the other women would ever be on the show with her again.
But see, that's what I was saying. I think she potentially could have if she hadn't blown it up so spectacularly, especially in this reunion. I think the reunion's going to be her downfall because she's already like after that finale, it was such an iconic episode and she was such a central part in it that I think she potentially could have been a deeply iconic housewife. But instead, she's gone into the reunion. She's already lying. She's got this real attitude in her voice and she's not being iconic. And she didn't realize, she didn't play it right, I don't think.
She's let herself down.
I know.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, Monica.
I'm just disappointed. I have a C also, which is the podcast, The Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, who, like Top Chef, is a housewives empath and he's an intuitive and he does a lot of episodes of his podcast, where he talks about different Bravo shows and he like drops into their emotional state or like the wounds that are the truth of like the argument. So he did a lot on the Richard sisters before this season where they're doing a lot of the honest, like Kyle's getting really therapized and honest about her relationship with Kathy. But yeah, he did an episode before the Salt Lake City finale came out all about Monica's wounds and her kind of like commitment to her trauma and like watching that play out on TV. And so I'm going to link that in the show notes as well as the Bravo docket.
Oh, great. And it's not a C also, but can I just say quickly, I am loving Kim being back on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Kim Richards, just stay forever.
She's doing better than she's ever been on TV.
Her murals, the way she's painting on her walls, it just brings me back to when we found out that she loves iguanas. That woman is a pure heart. I love her.
We love Kim. We're rooting for Kim.
We're rooting for Kim.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Always.
I'm glad you brought up Emma Stone before BL because like what you were referring to was when she was asked on the red carpet, I think, of like if Yorgos Lanthimos was going to make a film about a real housewife, she immediately said Jen Shah.
Of course.
And what a story that would be.
Yorgos does the Shah amazing.
Oh, I Can you imagine Yorgos's take on what's her husband's name?
Coach
Shah's like crazy pep talks.
Oh my god.
Can you imagine? I can imagine suddenly we're going to fisheye. We are deep within it. The color is changing.
The fisheye's on a Coach Sharp pep talk. I can't.
And like his kind of basketball outfit is just like slightly off kilter.
Big shoulders.
God, it would be so good. Although like when you see Jen Shah working on her laptop to essentially steal money from like the elderly and frail, like the computers that she's using are like haven't been invented yet or something.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing. And I'm loving it.
I think you need to come on board as a consultant for Yorgs.
Lanthimos, give me a call.
Yorgy.
So Poor Things is a film that came out too late in Australia, like everything else. But it came out on Boxing Day. I finally caught up to it last week. BL, you'd already seen it. Did you love?
I really liked it. I liked it a lot more than I expected to, because I'm going to be honest, I thought the posters for Poor Things were incredible and had been around for months because the release date was pushed back so far. But when I saw the trailer, I was like, I'm not going to like this. I thought I was turned off by the dialogue and the like, I must punch that baby. I was like, that's not funny to me. Like it felt a little, I don't know. I was nervous. I was nervous going into it. I did not expect to like it, similar to Mean Girls. Mm-hmm. But I had a really fun time. Like the comedy of it, I thought was really strong. Visually, none of it is my taste, but I really enjoyed it. I felt like I was like having deja vu for like a children's book or game or something from when I was really young. And I mean, the performances were all like wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really a really gorgeous way to spend. I don't even know how long it went for. I was just like strapped in for the ride.
Two plus.
Oh.
Yeah.
As everything is.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, I loved it. I adored it. I have been ignoring reviews from this since it premiered at Venice. Mm-hmm. I went to Venice last year, but it got there too late to see the film. And I wasn't locked out of the cinema. Like it premiered the dates before I was at the festival. They didn't, keep me out. But can you imagine? Anyway, I would have been so mad. But look, I have not read a single review. It premiered on like the 2nd of September last year, and I just went into like Yorgos black hole, essentially, because I did not want to hear about it, and have like had to turn off every single podcast that I normally listen to as soon as they mention the words. I'm like, oh, nope. Glad to have finally seen it. I, like you, obviously loved the posters. The posters were brilliant. I didn't mind the trailer, but it did set up a few things that I was like you, a bit nervous about. And there are so many things in this film that are particular bugbears of mine.
Name them.
Steampunk.
Yep.
Fisheye. The fisheye and adults acting like children.
Yeah. Yes.
I really hate watching adults act as babies or children.
Same. And that's the plot. So it's like a real fundamental thing you overcame to enjoy this movie.
Pretty much. But, you know, I really love his films. I'm sure you do too. Mm-hmm. Remember the first time I saw Dogtooth? That was, of course, that was the first of his films I saw because it was his first film, but first feature. But I just kind of walked. I had a couple of hours to kill. I went into the IFC and saw the first thing, and I think I liked the poster and it floored me. I thought it was astounding.
Me too.
And this film is actually the closest thing I've seen of his to Dogtooth that we've had, more recent ones like Favourite and Lobster, etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought it was just quite brilliant. I loved the progression of the character of Bella, of being like so, because obviously she's a baby, but she's got a baby brain, but it's accelerating at a rapid speed. Yeah. So you're not stuck in. She's not stuck in baby land.
She's like Robin Williams in Francis Ford Coppola's greatest film, Jack.
Jack, which I need to rewatch.
She's aging 7 years at a time.
I need to rewatch that. Do you know, I never saw Benjamin Button because I was like, I can't deal with the eventual baby.
Yeah.
You know it's coming.
The eventual baby is the trickiest bit of Benjamin Button.
I'm just like, I can't do it. I'll spend the whole movie just like waiting for the baby to come in. I can't do it. That is the film, right?
Yeah, I only saw it the one time. But yeah, it ends at baby.
Yeah, see, this at least starts at baby and progresses. I can handle that.
Yeah.
Can only get better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really loved the kind of progression of Bella, how she became like self-knowing. Mm. And that she started like seeking so much pleasure once she realized what pleasure was and like her own sexuality, but also that then led to education.
Yes.
And like educating herself and realizing that there was so much more to the world, and particularly that scene where she, and like full spoilers, but when she goes to Alexandria and she sees the like huddled masses, mm-hmm. and people with no food, and it, like that situation is explained to her, like the actual evils of the world, and of, like the lack of generosity and the lack of sharing between humans, and like not being able to lift people up, and that her go-to is, well, I'll just give them all Mark Ruffalo's money and like that will fix it, is like also such a kind of brilliant thing to put into this film, because it's like that is how you feel as a teenager or however old you are when you kind of go, oh my God, mom,
there are
and dad,
resources like, here. Why aren't they there?
Yeah, totally. Like, have you heard that this war is happening? You know, like that kind of. And your parents, like, yeah, babe.
It's why we sponsor World Vision Children.
Yeah. But anyway, so I thought that was. I just really loved that scene so much, but also how it's like, in just like Monica, there are so many parallels to Real Housewives of Salt Lake City here, of. The like cycle of cruelty and like the cycle of abuse, of how you see her, like God, like Willem Dafoe's character, and people coming for his Scottish accent. Like, it's a fantasy land. Let it go.
Every member of the cast is American other than him. Like, Mark Ruffalo's accent is a whole nother journey.
It is. It's fine. But... where was I? Oh, that his, like, the way he is because the way his father was with him, and he thinks that he's doing a better version of what, you know, he's very different. And then Bella also falls into what God was doing. It's by the end of the film. Like, it's, I don't know, I just thought it was, and people are complaining that the ending is a little too neat, but I enjoyed that.
Yeah, me too. I think that there have been some criticisms of this, like the feminist criticisms of this, I think, focus too much on her like sexual awakening and sexual journey and like freedom through sexuality and eventually like becoming a sex worker and earning her own money. But I think they ignore the thing that you just talked about very conveniently, the idea that she like makes these intellectual discoveries and empathetic emotional discoveries as well, and kind of like forms her own worldview and kind of morality from her own making and experience, like on the boat and in all these different communities and in the brothel that she works in. There specifically was like a piece in Vulture by Angelica Jade Bastian, who I quite like as a critic, but the idea that one of the quotes from it, she said, there's a corroded spirit to the story, like it's intermittently possessed by an edgelord who's unaware most women menstruate, and an early wave white feminist who believes having sex is the most empowering thing a woman can do. And I just found that this, it's like, did you only watch the scenes where she was like discovering her sexuality? Because this film had so much to say about women's place in the world, and also like her intellectual journey was like fundamental and worked hand in hand with her sexual journey as well. Like the fact that she learned about sex through Mark Ruffalo's character, Duncan, who has this like free love spirit, which the cracks appear, obviously, when the woman he's wanting to have free love with decides she wants it for herself, and then he completely falls apart.
Yeah.
Like, this film has so much more to say about, like, the way that men view women, and especially, don't even get me started on the how many people desire a, like, grown woman's body with a baby's brain. Like,
oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I found that review really frustrating.
Yeah, I think that there were a few gross misreadings of the film in that way, that it's like, this is a movie about a woman's pleasure, and it's like, I don't think it is, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much about, like, the men surrounding her and the ideas that they are placing on her. And like you say, like, objectifying her as a woman with a baby brain, and then, like, not being able to deal with, like, any sense of agency. And also that, like, she starts out as, like, a woman who cannot, like, as we find out by the end of the film, that she was in this, like, horrific marriage. She hated her husband. He was a sadistic man, and she was pregnant with his child and then decided to end her life. And then she was, like, ripped out of that by Willem Dafoe's character. So it's like the one thing that woman had done for herself, not, you know, was corrupted by a man, and then her body was, like, yeah, like, the whole thing is very much about, like, a woman's place in a man's world, and the objectification and exotification. But also it is about this woman who is educating herself beyond her kind of quote-unquote means or, like, educational means. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's so much to it. It's such an interesting story, and there's not, like, one – I just said it was a gross misreading, but – like, there's not, like, a right or wrong with this or with anything, really.
Yeah.
Oh, a few things.
And, I mean, I guess, you know, critics are always going to come to a film with whatever they're going to take, what they want to take from it. And I just think we're right, you know?
Sure. I think we're right too. Yeah, there was a really annoying headline in the AFR of this film. And the headline of the whole review was, "This film will polarize viewers. Some will walk out." It's like, oh my God.
Okay, that could be about Bottoms or fucking Wonka.
It totally could. Mean Girls even.
Yeah.
Anyway, just that kind of thing is so irritating to me.
You know how you hate movies that sometimes you don't like? Like, this film will polarize viewers. Okay.
You might not like it. But yeah, look, and, like, Emma Stone, obviously, so, like, a great performance. And like, I kept thinking of, like, the certain scenes, like, when she is, like, discovering her sexuality and she's still kind of baby brain, like, how the other actors in that room would have been feeling or watching, like, watching her do that. It would have been a funny set to be on.
I was listening to her and Yorgos on the IndieWire podcast, and they had a really tiny set. Like, she was saying that they did all their own, they didn't have stand-ins for anything. Oh. So she was, like, on set every single moment. And she and Yorgi, like, they've already shot another movie together.
Oh, I love that. I didn't know.
With Willem Dafoe, with Margaret Qualley in New Orleans. He was like, yeah, we're trying to edit that while we're doing press for Poor Things. I completely forgot until he said that in this interview that Margaret Qualley was even in this movie. I completely forgot her getting, like, bonked in the head with a basketball. But I also, after seeing this movie, Emily and I went to see it together, and then afterwards we were on IMDb because we were like, when did Emma Stone go from, like, super bad Easy A Emma Stone to, like, Yorgos, cool girl, the favorite, etc.? And the turn was really La La Land, which was so recent.
Really?
She hasn't really done that many movies when you look at it. But, I mean, she has. But, you know, like, of these, like, award contender movies, it was, like, La La Land, Battle of the Sexes.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was, like, The Favourite, like, cool girl Emma Stone. And now she's in The Curse. Like, she's obviously doing all this kind of very highbrow artistic work, which is really interesting.
Yeah, she's in so many films that I've never heard of. I was just looking at her filmography.
You're not a Zombieland girl, Jinxie?
I've seen Zombieland.
Apparently there was a sequel I didn't know about.
Apparently she's a voice actress in The Croods 2, but I haven't seen that.
Your favourite.
My fave. I really loved the rest of the casting of it, though. There were so many good cameos or, like, just not cameos, they're just, it's just good casting. Like Vicky Pepperdine, like, really great. Vicky Pepperdine is like a, I think she's a British comedian actor who works a lot with Julia Davis, another great comedian. They had a very good podcast together. I'll try to find it for you. But also, I will fuck this name up, Hannah Shigula.
Okay.
Shigula. I don't know. She plays the woman on the boat.
Oh, the like dowager?
Yeah. She was one of Fassbender's biggest muses. Oh. And she was in like a lot of his films.
Okay.
Probably most famous for The Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant. And she was most recently in the Peter von Kant film that came out a couple of years ago.
Okay.
But yeah, I loved seeing her in it. Like just all these like clever little surprises I loved. Mm. Mark Ruffalo, I mean, he was the role of his lifetime,
playing
right?
A cad, like it's perfect casting.
Yeah, perfection.
Catherine Hunter, whose name I didn't know, who plays the madam in France, and just like her physicality and like covered in those tattoos. She's so tiny. I think she's a contortionist, which checks out.
Yeah, it checks out.
Yeah. I loved the fleshiness of this movie, like the costumes, mm-hmm. Apparently the audio kind of like the score for the boat was like a human heartbeat.
All right.
They tried to build in this kind of like carnality to like all elements of it, not just like Willem Dafoe's face.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Mm. I had no idea. Yeah, the costumes are just brilliant. One of the things I'm going to link to is, well, I've got two really good, there's so many pieces out there on the costuming of this film, but my favorite two, we've got Emma Stone interviewing the costume designer, Holly Waddington, in Interview Magazine, and she talks about like her favorite pieces to wear and how it made her feel as the character, and really interesting. And there was a good Vogue UK article called Condom Coats, Vagina Blouses and Ruffles Galore, which really goes into like the little names that Holly Waddington had for the pieces on set. And I loved that coat that she wears when she's working in the brothel, and the first time she has sex in the brothel, she's still wearing the coat, and it's sort of designed to look like a giant condom. It's like, it's funny.
It's
just funny. That's the thing also. This film is really funny.
Yes.
Like really funny.
And the visual gags are like very sweet as well. Like the kind of Hieronymus Boschy like world that they've created in the middle of what we assume to be London, like, you know, a horse-drawn carriage but the horse has no front legs, and you know, like a little chicken dog hybrid rolling around. It's very like Garden of like Spooky Delights.
Yeah, it's just, it's quite silly, the thing, like seeing those hybrid animals, it's so silly.
It was like The Favourite, where she and Taylor Swift's ex-boyfriend were like punching each other in the forest. Like that was really fun.
It's just fun. It's so silly. It kind of reminded me, the ship scenes in particular reminded me of the film City of Lost Children from 1995, the Caro and Janae film that is like set at sea, and Jean-Paul Gaultier did all of the costuming for that film. But yeah, that kind of like fantasy world, like this very dark fantasy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, I enjoyed.
The 9-month cruise on TikTok could do with a lot more kind of like chic costumes. I'll tell you what.
I hope someone's getting educated on that fucking cruise.
We've got to, I just want to point out that we're really in our sexy Frankenstein era.
We are, aren't we?
Jacob Elordi is going to play Frankenstein's monster in the new Guillermo del Toro movie. I'm convinced that Andrew Garfield dropped out because he couldn't do what Emma Stone, his ex-girlfriend, did. He was like, it's too much. We can't talk about each other in every interview.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And obviously Jacob Elordi's got the hype for Frankenstein.
It's like kind of perfect. Have his face all fucked up for once.
Is it like
give me a bit of relief?
Is it like a What is this Frankenstein? All I saw was the casting.
Jinxie, you know all I saw was the casting and his jawline.
What we care about.
Headline, jawline, the two lines I care about. I also have a C also for myself, which is to finally fucking watch Rami, you stupid bitch, Brody, because I never did. And like Rami Yusuf is like so gorge in this movie.
Yeah, he's a really good character, really interesting character.
Yeah,
I never saw it either. I shall do.
All right, let's add it to both our lists. All right, Jinxie, it's time for Also Also's. What's your first recommendation this week?
My first one is Short and Sweet, BL. We don't need to be talking about it too long because it's a film that we have discussed at length on this podcast before. It's Kelly Reichardt's Showing Up. It stars Michelle Williams, Hong Chau, John Magara, and my favorite flute player, Andre 3000. But if you missed it at the festivals in Australia last year, there is a season starting in Sydney at Golden Age Cinema from Friday, 19th of Jan. I think it will be quite a limited run of the film, so you need to book in for your tickets quick, smart. And it is such a beautiful film, top three from last year for me, and, yeah, do not miss seeing this in a cinema.
Yeah, Alp, if you want to hear us talk more about it over on Patreon, it was, spoiler alert, in our top tens of 2023. So you can listen to that if you are a member of the Hog Hive on Patreon. My first also is for your local farmers market. That's it. Specifically, if you live in Victoria, after all of the like very intense weather we've been having lately and quite a long break over the holidays for between farmers markets, there's like a surplus of stuff. And also like in inclement weather, farmers do it tougher than anyone. So if you are able and you have a farmer's market nearby, like do your grocery shopping there this weekend. I'm going to be at the Abbotsford Convent Farmer's Market on Saturday morning. And if you're in
Melbourne,
come
say hi.
Come say hi. Don't. and the Melbourne Farmers Markets has like, I think, four or five every single weekend, Saturdays and Sunday mornings. So like there are a bunch all over Melbourne.
Cute. My next one is a podcast episode, a particular episode. It's called Tired, Distracted, Burned Out. I mean, it's the latest episode of Ezra Klein's New York Times podcast, which I listen to periodically. I do not listen to this podcast every single week, but I found this one quite pertinent for this time of year when we're kind of back at work trying so hard to stay focused. But yeah, look, this one looks at attention span and he brings on an attention span analyst. I don't know who she is, who talks about like all of these studies that she has been doing.
I got distracted.
Well, the thing is I had to do that little 10 seconds rewind so many times listening to this podcast because I did get distracted, but I did get through it. And you can also just read the transcript online. If you find it hard. But look, I found this very interesting. It was very much talking about how our attention, we all know our attention spans have changed over time, but this was looking at real data of how, just how much that has changed. I think it was like 20 years ago or something, some study was done and it was people had the attention span to look at a screen or look at one window essentially for 2.5 minutes. But in 2023, that was down to 48 seconds. And as Ezra Klein points out, I can't believe anyone has the attention span to look at something for 48 seconds. But it really is looking at that and the way that you can sort of change your attention span and like how best, like practical ways to go about that.
Mm.
Interesting.
I found that this week I went to the dentist and they put, got my teeth clean and they put like the fluoride gel stuff in and I had to hold it for 2 minutes. And I was like, I've been here for 10 minutes at least. Like this is the longest 2 minutes of my life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me brain's fucked. My next recommendation is for a show that you introduced me to, Jinxie. It was one of your also's probably like 2 years ago. Julia on Binge. Season 2 is out in full. It goes into Julia Child and Paul Child's spy stuff, which is very fun. They spend a lot of time in France at the start of the season. So we get a lot of Isabella Rossellini being like a very jealous friend, which is fun. But the star of this season for me is Judith Light. who is going blind and as a book publisher is trying to hide it from everyone, lashing out and eventually making me fucking cry in every single scene that she's in.
Oh, Judy.
It's so good.
Judy.
It's on Binge in Australia.
Yeah, I need to catch up with that. I only saw the first season and I only really started watching it because Melanie Mayrin, our fave from Girlfriends, directs it. So I knew that they were filming in France because I follow her on Instagram.
Oh my God, Jinxie. I didn't realize until she posted it this week, Melanie Mayrin on Instagram. She's a great follow. She directed the Babysitter's Club movie.
I didn't realize that either.
Which is like fundamental to my childhood, but the sad reason I learned it is that one of the actors in it died recently. The guy who plays the teenage boyfriend of Dawn, and she like hangs out with him. Oh, no, Stacy. Stacy. The guy who plays
Stacy.
Yeah, Stacy from New York, and he like wears a beret and he's like, you're 13, because he tries to take her to a club. Anyway, he died. R.I.P.
Valet. My last one is a film that, look, it is out. It is in the awards ceremonies. It's the name is popping up everywhere. However, I do feel like it's really being lost or people just don't know where to watch it. It's NIAD. It's streaming on Netflix. I'm so sorry to be like, watch on Netflix. But like Annette Bening, she's being nominated for Best Actor for this, for everything, hopefully an Oscar. She's not winning. But it is a really entertaining watch. It stars Annette Bening as Nyad, this like famous long distance swimmer. I wasn't aware of this woman, a real woman. She was completely fixated on swimming between Florida and Cuba, or from Cuba to Florida. And she has to give up when she is in like the prime of her life, essentially as an athlete. And then in her 60s returns to it and is like completely and utterly obsessed and fixated on this goal, which seems completely unsurmountable. And so this film follows those journeys as like an older woman, and she brings along her coach, who is like one of her best friends, played by Jodie Foster. And they are just two like athletic lesbians in their 60s, late 50s, 60s, and whatever. And they're not together. They're just friends. And just seeing that these like friendly athletic lesbians of a particular age is just so beautiful. You never get to see it on screen. Like you never see this on screen unless it's like one of them's having some steamy romance with like a 24-year-old or whatever. Like that is the only time you get to see that. So it's just, or they're like an aging and then finally they get married once marriage equality comes in. Hooray. Like that is what we see of like that era of lesbian. Anyway, it's not a very well-directed film. Okay. I will say there are lots of flourishes in it that I was not on board with.
Okay.
However, it is like a good sort of goal-oriented fitness film for the new year. But like just seeing Annette Bening, like, you know, without any makeup on and like the swimming goggles just like burned into her face, like that tan you get from wearing, oh my God, and like her lips just like blistering constantly, and then Jodie Foster wearing like disgusting cargo shorts with like gross belts and like big keychains and like wraparound sunglasses and just like the easiest to manage hair. Like there's just such easy to manage hair in this movie. I know those women, and you can just see Jodie Foster's character like getting on to like an Olivia cruise at some point in the summer. I live for those women.
It's Carabiner culture.
It is Carabiner culture. And it will send you into a complete and utter wiki hole after you watch the film.
My favorite.
Yeah, don't do that before the film. Don't read up on NIAID.
Okay.
Watch the film, then read the Wikipedia, and then you will be reading like many Reddits, etc.
Okay, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's like a full week plan, this film.
You really showed some restraint not saying F lesbian every time. You described my
bad
looks.
My bad. That's gonna be my 2024 athlesbian culture.
I'm so excited. My last one is something I'm kind of equally as enthusiastic about, the new Waxahachie single, Right Back to It. I'm so excited for a new era of Waxahachie. It's her first single from her new album, Tiger's Blood, which is going to be out, I think, in March. Features MJ Lenderman, who is in Australia playing at Golden Plains in March. And I was not historically a Waxahachie fan until she, for lack of a better phrase, went country with St. Cloud, which came out in 2020. And that album, like I was about to mention one song in particular, but like there are like five songs on that album that like truly transport me to like the most emotional states I have ever been in 2020. Like I have a real visceral memory of like that being my lockdown soundtrack, but also it's one of the few albums from that year that I like need to return to regularly. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful. And so I'm so excited for a new Kady Crutchfield, baby.
I gotta have a listen.
Yeah.
I gotta have a spin.
You'll love it.
Hey, our live show is very soon, BL.
It's so soon.
It is so soon. We're doing also our fresco at the Malt House Outdoor Stage on Saturday, the 3rd of February. It starts 8 p.m., doors at 7. You want to get there a bit early to get some cocktails, some spritzes, some whatever you're drinking, ready to go as the sun sets. It's going to be gorge.
It's going to be gorge. We're going to be chatting to Stella Mosgawa and Courtney Barnett, and we really hope that we'll see you there. The code to get a discounted ticket is see also alfresco, one word. And if you're a member of the Hog Hive over on Patreon, you'll get a special discounted code, a further discount for being a member of our Hog Hive.
Yeah, which also leads me to go and follow us at Patreon. We've got lots of bonus episodes out already.
Thanks as always to Samuel Hodge for our artwork, Harvey Sutherland for our theme music. You can follow us on Instagram, See Also Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
We will see you next week. I think we're talking Priscilla next week.
Oh my God, it's Priscilla time, baby.
It's a lordy time.
It's been a friggin' time. We've been waiting.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.